From CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Ira Nadell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Today, Richard Cavell of the Department of English and a specialist in media theory and the work of Marshall McLuhan. Greetings, Richard.
Hello, Ira.
Now, I know you've had this long-standing commitment to media studies, but how would you actually define the field? I mean, to me, it seems so elusive and broad. A conventional version might be, he's talking about radio, or he's talking about film, or he's talking about television.
Yes, we are. We're doing all of those things, and that's the conventional and perhaps original focus of media studies courses, and remains the focus largely today in many, many universities. But there's been a theoretical turn in the last 20 years. And it's that theoretical turn that has informed my own work and has informed the establishment of the Bachelor in Media Studies program that will launch here in the Faculty of Arts within the next year.
Okay, so but what is the theoretical turn? I mean, again, I'm the student and, you know, I want to take this course because it sounds very au courant, but I don't know what it's about.
The theoretical moment occurred when Marshall McLuhan uttered the words, "The medium is the message."
Well, he said that in 1950-something or other, right?
1959, yes.
Okay, so how is it applicable today?
Well, it's applicable today because what we're learning is that the content of our mediations is perhaps even less important than the form of mediation. And so we're trying to shift our attention from that content-based interpretive model to a more formal mediatic model.
So it's the way in which I receive the information or the detail that
That's
becomes
right.
important.
That's right.
Is there a history to media studies?
Absolutely.
Where does it begin?
It goes back to Plato and his concern about this new thing called writing. He was absolutely terrified by this new thing of writing because he said we are going to lose our memories.
He's probably right.
He's probably right, yes.
He's probably right. But, I mean, the development of the digital world, is this yet another unfolding of media studies? Do you see this as progressive, or is this something which, well, it's a variation on a theme, so to speak?
Well, let's remember that the alphabet is a digital system. So digitality is very, very old. It goes back to about 1700 BCE. Digital is used today as a sort of mantra phrase. But I think that what media studies can tell us is that rather than evolving in a sort of Darwinian way, what is so interesting today is that we're evolving with our medial technologies.
All right. So that new ways of expressing ourselves in a way shapes what we learn or
Precisely.
What we know.
And not only what we know and what we learn, but who we are. Media are both ontological and epistemological. They change what we know and how we know, and in doing so, change who we are.
So if I'm aware of all this, do I also shift or alter my self-perception?
Absolutely.
I have to think about this. Okay, let's go back to McLuhan.
Yes.
He is always cited as the pivotal figure
Indeed.
In discussions of media studies.
Yes.
But why?
As he loved to put it, we were the first that ever did burst upon that shining sea.
Well, that sounds very poetic, Richard, but really, what does that mean?
It means that when he got together with some colleagues at the University of Toronto in the 1950s to put together the beginnings of media studies, no one else was doing it. And the interesting thing is, there's a direct connection to what you and I do in English studies because he was trained as a Renaissance rhetorician. And when he got his doctorate from Cambridge University and arrived in Madison, Wisconsin, and taught his first class in Renaissance rhetoric, he realized immediately his students couldn't follow him. McLuhan was unfazed. The next day he turned up with a whole bunch of newspaper ads. They were studying advertising, and that was the beginning of media studies.
That's very interesting. Mm. I didn't realize that. Mm. Of course, I knew of his academic training and
yes.
discipline in English and so forth.
Yes.
Who would be some other figures that we would put with McLuhan, either before or after that you think are instrumental in terms of shaping media studies?
Well, his colleague at the University of Toronto was an anthropologist of the Canadian North, really, Edmund Carpenter. Carpenter was turned to media studies because when he went to the Canadian North and looked at, for instance, Inuit drawing, he found something quite fantastic. Their spatial conceptions were completely different from our own. There was sort of no up or down or inside or outside. When they drew something, they even drew things they couldn't see. Like when they were drawing the ice floes, they would also draw what was underneath the ice. And he wondered why, and what he finally realized was they were working out of the preconceptions of an oral culture. Mm-hmm. And for oral cultures, everything is present all at once, all at the same time, unlike written cultures, which tend to abstract and classify.
Oh, right. You've mentioned Carpenter. Yes. Who would be someone else? And I note that you've cited two Canadians, or at least two Canadian scholars.
Well, there is something, in fact, called the Toronto School of Communications. And that school is said to have been inaugurated by McLuhan's other Toronto colleague, the legendary Harold Adams Innes, the great political economist who began his career studying the fur trade routes and the cod fisheries, and then had a sudden and profound insight that the fur trade routes were also communication channels. And at the end of his career, he shifts his entire focus to something that he calls the bias of communications, arguing that communications have a space bias or a time bias.
Would you go so far as to suggest there is something Canadian about the identification, if not development, of media studies?
Absolutely.
And what would that be? The awareness of space, time, distance between communities, this sort of thing?
There's partly that. There's also the fact that Canada is what has been called a delayed nation. We sort of arrived in, you know, confederating in 1867. We arrive at a moment where, to be a bit exaggerated about it, history is over. And we ask ourselves, how can we contribute to the world of learning, the world of cultural production? And we realize quite instantly that it can't be in terms of content. The content has already been done. So we simply turn our eyes to the form. We say, okay, we want to talk about the form of content. And out of that emerges someone like Innes, who writes an entire history of the world from the Egyptians to the present day 1950s Toronto in which he was writing, all based on their communication practices. Not on the content. That didn't interest Innes.
It's fascinating. Now, would a figure like Glenn Gould figure into this?
Well, Ira, you mentioned Glenn Gould in this room in CITR, where about 20 years ago, I, with the wonderful help of the CITR staff, produced a three-part documentary on Glenn Gould and the influence on Gould of his fellow Torontonian, Marshall McLuhan.
I understand another one of your interests is spatial production.
Yes.
What is that?
Spatial production is a form of production that is configurational. So rather than understanding processes in terms of linearity, you understand processes in terms of configuration. This means that you have to attribute a temporal dimension to space, which is something McLuhan talked about and was actually quite revolutionary in his time, because space was thought to be static, unmoving. McLuhan said no, and he argued from something that in fact controls what we're doing in this very room, acoustic space. Which, of course, if you're in an oral culture, you would understand to be living and time-based as well as spatial. This was another of McLuhan's great insights.
So it would be a kind of space which has tone,
yes,
expression,
yes,
anger,
yes,
happiness,
yes,
all conveyed through not just voice, but
yes,
physical gesture as well, I would presume.
That's right. It is the space theorized by Einstein in his theory of relativity, whereby the fourth dimension of space is time.
But we are, facing a problem, and the problem is that essentially we live in a written culture, in a print culture, and so The challenges, I might imagine, would be how to express this orality on the page.
Well, Ira, we actually no longer live in a print culture. We're now living in a digital culture. I'm looking at flashing little lights on the control panel in this room. I'm looking at a computer that is actually measuring the oscillations of my voice at this very moment. This is all digital, and we must say goodbye, Ira, to the culture of the book. Not that the book is over, but that we're moving into a new paradigm.
So tell me what you think of libraries. Do libraries still have a function, or are they in the process of transformation?
In the process of a profound transformation. Let us have a look at both the Chapman Commons as well as the Vancouver Central Public Library. When Moshe Safdie produced his plans for the Vancouver Public Library at Hamilton in Georgia, he was excoriated because he built that huge atrium and all of those wide open spaces. Where would we put the books, they said. Well, they're no longer laughing at Moshe because it is one of the most used institutional facilities in the city of Vancouver. Why? Because Moshe put people at the center of the library, and that is what the Chapman Commons does as well, and it's quite symbolic that it's in the original library of our university, and it's always thronged with students.
But they tend to be sitting separately and involved with their laptops or desktops. I don't think they're in the midst of conversation and dialogue.
Absolutely not. They're in conversation not with each other, but with a world, global dialogue of which individual conversations are only a tiny part. We have returned, Ira, to the global village.
I think I've heard that phrase before. Now, I think UBC is actually moving to this new Bachelor in Media Studies. Can you say something about the program? What courses would one take to get this degree?
Yes, it will be unique in the faculty because it won't be a degree in arts. It will be a Bachelor of Media Studies. So you will graduate with a degree in Media Studies, not a Bachelor of Arts. It is also unique because it has both arts and science courses in it. The computer science department has created two new courses for us. They were absolutely delighted to be told that they would be able to teach to art students because they said they're tired of teaching to nerds. That might have to be edited out. I don't know. So it is doubly unique, and we hope to launch it, have a soft launch, certainly, in the fall of 2014.
But what would these courses actually be? So I'm very excited about this. I want to enroll in the program.
Yes.
I see, yes, computing science offers these courses. What's the course?
Is it? Well, Ira, in your first year as a Bachelor of Media Studies student, you will be taking a journalism course specially made for us called New Media and Society, which will deal with social media. You will be taking a course from Creative Writing called Introduction to Writing for New Media. You will be taking a course in Film and Televisual Studies. You will be taking an art history course in Digital Arts and Contemporary Arts. And you will be making your own videos, as well as taking that course from computer science in computation programs and programming.
Sounds
that's
very,
just in your first year.
That's
Ira.
In my first year.
Yeah.
And this is a four-year program?
It's a four-year program.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you expect from the graduates once they complete this program? In other words, are they prepared to go into different professions related to the new media? Is that possibly one intention of
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely, and it's a very good question because the program is also unique in having a very strong co-op development to it. And that co-op development will be coordinated with the Master of Digital Media Studies program on the Great Northern Way campus. And they are delighted to be working with us. We have a memorandum of agreement with them. Some of their students, it's a graduate program, they will be taking some of our fourth year courses, and our students will be taking some of their graduate courses, and they have been delighted to allow us to cooperate with them in student co-op placements that they have already mapped out for us.
I think that's very exciting. That
it is,
really
yes.
is exciting. But I want to come all the way back to the beginning.
Absolutely.
And your own sort of evolution into media studies.
Yes.
I mean, was this something that happened gradually, or your early work, perhaps as a graduate student, involved some sort of exposure to this world, because you're strongly immersed in it, and
yes.
I admire that.
It happened all of a sudden, Ira. I went to the University of Toronto in 1975 to begin a doctorate in comparative literature. And I went there specifically to study with Northrop Frye. And I'm very happy that I studied with Nori. I also was very, very lucky to become a fellow of Massey College at the University of Toronto. And one day I was sitting in the common room waiting to go up to lunch, and Claude Bissell, former president of U of T and one of the founders of Massey College, which I'm happy to say is having its 50th anniversary this year, said to me, "Richard, Marshall's coming for lunch. Would you like to join us?" I thought he might mean Marshall McLuhan. I said, "Claude, I'd love to." We go up to lunch. A few minutes later, McLuhan arrives, and something absolutely memorable happens. The entire lunchroom falls silent. Even in 1978, he still had that aura. And we sat down. Marshall talked for 4 hours. It changed my life. I've never looked back.
That's quite a remarkable story, and it explains a tremendous amount, and I can see how that kind of engagement would do that. And maybe this brings us to our kind of final topic, which I know you're powerfully interested in, and that's cultural memory.
Yes.
And Canada.
Yes.
You feel there's been an absence of recording cultural memory, or there's been a neglect?
Yes. I arrive at this topic through media studies because all media are memory systems. And I moved from media studies to an approach to Canadian studies that fascinates me, which is the fact that, A, cultural memory has become a hot topic in our literature over the last 10 or 15 years, but also through an ancillary development, which is the whole creation of the Canadian Museum of Human Rights in Winnipeg. And I thought, how can these two events, if I can call them that, be brought together? And I've taught seminars on this topic in the Department of English. And the last time I taught it, as a group, the seminar made a proposal to the Canadian Museum of Human Rights to stage their first conference. We are still waiting for a reply. I'm going to send them another email because they will be launching this fall in Winnipeg, and I'm hoping they can take us up on this process, because cultural memory is something that is very, very vexed in Canada. There is a lot that we have wanted to forget.
That's a fascinating statement, and I think I do share that. Richard, yes. Thank you so much. This has been absolutely remarkable. I've so enjoyed the conversation. Our guest today is Richard Cavell of the Department of English. I want to thank him for joining us on UBC Arts on Air. And stay tuned for future guests who will reveal many of the talents and, dare I say, obsessions of our diverse and energetic faculty and program.